Welcome to your Found Family podcast, where we don't just have a heart-to-heart, we connect soul to soul. I'm your host, Lizzie, a certified coaching practitioner who found family outside of blood family. In our Found Family, you are accepted and assured that you are not alone. Subscribe and tune in for educational and empowering soul chats with women from all over the world, talking about well-being, personal growth and development, and mental and emotional health. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Found Family. I am super excited. I have Tracy back on Found Family with me today. Super, super excited. Tracy was actually the very first person who joined me on Found Family as my first guest. So it's very special and truly such an honor to have her here with me again. And we are talking today about how we can trigger ourselves with our own thoughts and actions and what to do about it. Tracy is a speaker and author, passionate anxiety warrior who writes and speaks about how to pull oneself out of the trenches of stress, anxiety, and worry. Tracy's award-winning novel, The Grace of Crows, follows the journey of a woman who learns how to overcome debilitating anxiety after reconnecting with a long-lost friend who has since become homeless. Her educational background includes an MA in clinical psychology, and you can find all this information on her website, www.tracyshawn.com. Tracy, hello again and welcome.
Hi, Lizzie. Thank you for having me on. I'm very happy to be on.
Oh, I am so excited. And I know we were chatting about this a little bit before and over email, that this topic of triggers has been something that has really been on both of our minds, and it's really special that we're on the same wavelength. So I'm really excited to talk about this.
Me too. Yeah. And and it's been happening to me a lot lately. So
me too. Me too. Awesome. And so before we get started, I think it might be helpful to share with our listeners, what exactly do we mean by trigger, or what is a trigger?
Well, okay. So I believe when people use the word trigger, it's usually something that's caused by post-traumatic stress disorder. And, someone has said or done something that has triggered an unwanted negative emotion, usually a negative, such as stress, anxiety, fear. It doesn't always have to be, PTSD. It could be just our emotional buttons get pushed by others, or as we were, you introduced it, we can do it to ourselves too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same thing, if someone else has intentionally or unintentionally, tried to push our emotional buttons, and then we feel fearful or frustrated or angry, we can sometimes seek things, situations, news, media that will push our own buttons. And sometimes I think we'll do it intentionally because we think that maybe it will help us gain control over our emotions. And sometimes I think it's unintentional too. I think, it's just like you're flipping through things and it's like, oh, I'll read that. I know me, it's like something I'm afraid of. I better glom onto that. I better read all about that. And then my heart is pounding and it's not always such a good thing to get all that information.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And to your point, I agree with you. I think that there are definitely conscious triggers and subconscious triggers. And just, I saw on Wikipedia, the definition of a trauma trigger says, a trauma trigger is a psychological stimulus that prompts recall of a previous traumatic experience. The stimulus itself need not be frightening or traumatic, or may be only indirectly or superficially reminiscent of an earlier traumatic incident, such as a scent or a piece of clothing. So I think that really goes hand in hand to what you shared as like a definition of a trigger. And it really does sound like, again, it's sort of like an indirect or a direct. And I can also relate with hearing things like like a scent or a piece of clothing. I mean, I think that oftentimes when we experience this trauma and we have a reaction from it, so in my case, you know, having struggled with anxiety, if I was experiencing a panic attack, and let's say at the very peak of it, I saw someone who was like wearing a red jacket, there's been times where in the midst of a panic attack, I will remember either smells or things that I saw during that episode, which could, you know, trigger something else in the future. So it's kind of like a combination of all of those things.
I totally agree. And I think they also, this is kind of off topic a little bit, but I think scent really makes us remember things. So you're right. I mean, there's so many layers to that. It could be something someone said, something someone did, something we're reading, something like you said, totally random that we don't have any control over, like someone walking by in a red jacket or the scent of whatever, a bonfire. So, yeah, it's hard. It's really difficult being a human being.
Yeah.
It gets triggered and the emotional buttons get pressed.
I know, especially for the subconscious ones.
Yes, yes. So I think it's important for all of us, even people that don't have PTSD to look at, you know, that, because I think we all get our emotional buttons pressed. We're humans. We've all had things that have happened to us that are upsetting and things that are happening to us that are upsetting. So I think this is a good podcast for everyone to listen to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of ways that we can trigger ourselves, are there certain triggers that you have personally experienced or other things that can trigger us?
For me, a lot of it is very, you know, the really dark, negative news. And I want to keep up on the news. Don't get me wrong. But even on a friend said a long time ago, and I remember this, it was a really intelligent thing. She said, she goes, you know what? I want to keep up with the world news. I want to know what's going on in the world, what's going on in politics. I don't necessarily, if I see that, you know, some college student has been murdered, I don't need to read that. And I thought, no, she's right. I don't. Because then I just go, ooh, I spiral.
Right.
It's a what if?
So, that's so true.
And sometimes you can just get enough from a headline to go, okay, they caught the person. And, you know, we're as human beings, I might have said this in the last podcast, but we're naturally kind of geared to reading the bad news and what bad could happen, because it's a natural inclination, because we feel like, okay, that's going to give me more information, so it's not going to happen to me. But we have to look at what works and what doesn't work. If reading that kind of stuff makes you go at the end, oh, okay, well, I'm going to be careful, like if it's your local news, I'm going to be careful not parking in the parking lots at night. If you're, especially, I know when I'm anxious, just generally, I am not, sometimes I like to watch mysteries and you know what happened, and I'll get on YouTube and like the worst mysteries of the last 10 years. Don't ask me why I do that, but if I'm in a good space, it's okay. But if I'm really anxious, not good for me. So I think it's looking at, really being aware of what has worked, what hasn't worked for you personally.
You are reading my mind yet again, Tracy. And I'm again, like, smiling from ear to ear, just completely, like, pleasantly surprised at, like, how in alignment we are, and we are truly, like, on the same vibe, because I was just going to add that self-awareness component is so important. And what I'm hearing from you is the importance of understanding how we react to certain situations and how we react to certain things. And it sounds like from a conscious level, yeah, absolutely. If we're listening to the news and we're feeling, you know, the response, like the body response is clenching of your throat or your palms getting sweaty or your face getting red, or you feel like your blood pressure is going up, then that's a way for us to sort of take inventory of our feelings. Like if our body was a pantry and we had certain things like stocked in the pantry, and you have to take inventory of, okay, I need a little bit more of this, and maybe I bought too much pasta and I don't need to go get pasta next time. It's like we're sitting there taking inventory of our feelings and our emotions and how we are reacting to things. And for the subconscious, I mean, those are definitely more tricky because, again, if we were in the midst of a trauma or if there was something like a panic attack that was, you know, giving us a sensation, but we don't remember what triggered it consciously, or we don't remember what was happening around us, the subconscious will store that. But that is definitely where the self-awareness component comes in, is to be able to, again, whether it's conscious or subconscious, take the inventory of how things around you are making you feel. I mean, on the same, with the same coin, but on the other side of the coin, there are positive sensations that can trigger, like you smell a perfume that reminds you of, you know, someone that you're very fond of, or, you know, you hear the sound of like the ocean and it reminds you of this really great trip that you took. So it can go both ways. There are sensations that our body feels when triggers happen that remind us of, you know, things that weren't pleasant that caused us pain. And then there are sensations that caused pleasure. And so, yeah, being mindful of, okay, this thing made me feel this type of way, and if I am going to be proactive to better manage this feeling, then how can I go about not experiencing that sense again?
That, yes. And I like what you said too about the positive too, because then we were talking before we actually started the podcast, and you had forwarded an article in Psychology Today. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the title, but they were talking about the thoughts, that our feelings aren't just random. There's thoughts behind those feelings, and that it's the more we just try to push away a negative thought, the harder it is, but that you replace it with something positive. So going back to what you just said about, yeah, sometimes we get our emotional buttons pushed by positive things too. And to, you know, maybe when I haven't been so good at this myself lately, but maybe when we are being triggered, our emotional buttons being pushed negatively, to look and seek for things that make us feel positive. Mm. So like you said, that person, maybe that's your best friend. Maybe that means you spend more time with your best friend. You call your best friend when you've gotten an emotional trigger. You know that being outside is it as simple as it sounds. I know for me, sometimes just even in the middle of the night, walking outside and looking up at the stars, like, can kind of make me feel, oh, yeah, there's a way bigger world out there than just my little mind going in circles. So I like what you said about that, about the positive.
Yeah, and I think that's really important for all of us to have this, like, friendly reminder that, in the same way that we can be triggered by emotions and or by thoughts that bring up emotions that are not always the, you know, the fluffiest of you know, feelings like inside, there are other things that we can that can trigger us for the positive. So it's almost like using the word like replacing that you just shared, it's how can we learn what the triggers are that evoke this feeling of anxiety or depression or stress and then replace it with a positive trigger. So maybe that could actually be like, as we're sitting here and I'm like, oh, you know what? This is like a really good idea to have like an exercise and either keep a journal for maybe like a day or a week about the negative triggers and then finding healthy alternative triggers so that every time we think an we have a thought that triggers an emotion that is like anxious or depressing or et cetera, then we replace it with, okay, well now I'm going to think positive, like replace it with, you know, like a thought that will bring about a feeling of pleasure instead.
Yeah. I think my experience with that is if I'm in an okay place, it's way easier to do. If I'm in that what if I'm spiraling into the what if, it's great for me to be doing this podcast because I've been there so much lately. It's harder to do, but it's possible. And so I kind of want to connect with the audience out there that if someone is having a really, really hard time right now doing that, just know that tomorrow or next week, it might not be as hard as it is right now. And so, you know, because it is really hard. And I also want to ask you this, Lizzie, too.
Sure.
And this goes with our triggers, our emotional buttons. You know how they say great inventors and authors and artists and scientists, like our sleep, we work on things in our sleep. And so you go to bed and you're thinking about something and you wake up, it's like you have that aha light bulb moment, which is awesome and so positive. Unfortunately, I notice with my anxiety is that I'll go to bed thinking about what I'm anxious about. And my brain has been so busy working all night. Even if I say, give me an answer that will give me more like a positive outlook, I'll wake up with a bigger what if question. And like, my brain's been working on it all night. Is that familiar to you at all?
That definitely resonates with me. And I would say that has actually been happening to me more so within the last like 2 weeks. Because of the fact that I have been going to sleep already thinking thoughts that are in, you know, like basically the stick, you know, poking like a grizzly bear kind of, you know, where it's, if I take too much time ruminating on the what ifs and that what you've said, and I know you've mentioned that a few times, which really just, you know, drives home with me because that's something that I really am struggling with as well. And like, I'm learning how to manage those what ifs. I have seen a correlation between going to sleep with my to-do list in mind, which again, could be a conscious trigger of you know, basically amplifying the feeling of being stressed and overwhelmed. And then the brain is really like remembering, okay, well, you have this as your last thought, and then I'll wake up feeling more anxious. And last week, it was probably the busiest week I've had in months, which is great because I like to keep busy. But sometimes when it gets to a point where you're too busy and you're too overwhelmed with what you have in front of you, we spend less time actually taking inventory of our feelings or stop and pause and try to, you know, try to push the happy triggers. So
exactly.
I definitely agree with you. I think that for me personally, the same has been happening. And so I think that what might be helpful even for us as we're having this soul chat, and again, that's why I love being able to just like get deep and have these kinds of conversations that bring about revelations, as well as, you know, just being able to share our stories of how we help manage these, you know, how we manage these things on a day-to-day, is to maybe start taking inventory before we go to sleep. And it should be like a nighttime exercise where we start pushing our own like happy trigger button. And if that means, I'm like, this is like, I'm loving this too. If that means like watching something funny, or if that means, you know, journaling, or if that means exercising. Like, everyone is going to have a different happy trigger. And I think that really boils down to what our, like, human need is. If our human need is we need to feel certain before bed, then do something on your to-do list before you go to bed that gives you that feeling of certainty. If your human need is love and connection, then reconnect with a friend or spend time with your loved one, something that gives you that feeling of love and connection before bed. If your human need is variety, then, you know, do something that is out of the box that you wouldn't normally do. If that's like taking a walk to the supermarket and doing it the reverse, you know, something like anything that's going to fill, you know, like fulfill your human need, which that's also part of like the self-awareness exercise of understanding, like, what do I really need to feel happy? What is something that gives me a sense of pleasure over pain?
Yeah. And peace of mind.
Yeah.
I need that. I also think, you know, as we're talking about this, those, what a thought, because I'm sure you can relate, you know, it's like wake up in the morning all day long and it gets worse at night. It gets worse when I wake up. It's always worse when I wake up in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Last night I woke up at 2 a.m. and I couldn't get back until 4:30.
Oh, no.
I know. So suffice to say, I have had a lot of coffee this morning, which helps. But I'm also, and I had forgot to practice this, I almost think that the what-if thoughts that we have, maybe in the middle of the day, we process it with a loved one, with a friend, or we journal, or we, you know, we write an article about it, or we, I don't know, find a song about it and kind of think about it. Maybe it's okay to take time in the middle of the day to ruminate a little bit, try to, like, you're, you know, anxious people that have more anxiety and ruminate more, you know, studies show are oftentimes more creative because it's a lot of creativity to do those what ifs. So kind of get with the creativity of, okay, well, if I have this what if, you know, what can I do to, let me write down 3 things you could do to deal with that what if thought. And if that means talking to a certain person or making something clear, it's not, we don't always unfortunately have control, but yeah, just, I think that may help if someone out there who's listening is dealing with being triggered in the middle of the night in the early morning hours, which I think happens to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love the idea of, it's almost like an intervention as we're thinking those what ifs, writing down 3 things that can help us better manage that what if.
Yeah.
So that it helps not only throughout the day, but then helps us have more like peace of mind at night. I really love that idea. And I think that 3 seems to be the magic number. I've read articles about like the science behind how the brain like actually remember things more clearly in 3 like concise steps or 3 in like sets of 3. So I know that for me, when I've been battling like heavily with obsessive compulsive disorder and needing to do things, my number tends to be 3-2. So if I have like the straightener plugged in, I would have to unplug it, open and close the door 3 times to make sure that it's definitely unplugged from the outlet. So I think that using that magic number 3 to put, you know, like an intervention. So as soon as we're thinking that what if thought, think, okay, well, what if I could do something about it? Or what if it was done differently? Or what if, you know, I could invite someone into this conversation who can help? Because I think, and again, as I'm learning more about even just questions and the power of questions, when we can get to a place of understanding our questioning pattern and interrupting our thoughts, it's like you know what the question is that's making you feel like you're in this, like you're stuck, you know, you're kind of feeling like trapped because you feel helpless and you feel like, well, since I don't know what the what if, then there's that level of certainty that just drowns. So
yeah.
To give ourselves, to put the power back into your hands, ask the same question, but with, you know, with like an added bonus at the end of it. So if it's like, oh my God, like if I'm going to do, or let's say that you're going for like a job interview and you think to yourself, like, what if the person doesn't like me? What if I'm not going to be prepared enough? And you just keep asking yourself the same thoughts that are triggering more pain. Why don't we then ask ourselves, well, what if I could talk to someone to give me confidence? Or what if I could, you know, take a look at something else on Google to learn more about how to best prepare myself? And sort of like think of solutions like right there in the moment to interrupt that pattern of thinking.
What is so powerful about that is I think a lot of people that are dealing with anxiety and, you know, other what if and being triggered emotionally, there's a feeling of not having control of the outcome.
Mm.
And
yes.
What that does is it gives you as the person who is trying to deal with this spiral control. And
right.
I think that is so, so empowering. And I think that can calm us all down and provide a peace of mind. And yeah, I guess I don't really have too much more to add to that. I think it's a great idea. And
me too. I'm loving that this soul shot is like stirring the pot. And, you know, it's like, we just turned on the stove and like the water's boiling and it's like, all right, I can start cooking now. Like these are things empowering, like action items that we could literally start implementing today, really. I mean, cause it's in New York now, it's 2:40. I think it's 2:12. Is it 11:40 by you?
Yeah. Yeah. California,
okay.
11:40. Yeah.
All right, so we have the rest of this afternoon to start implementing these things, and we should like report back and like share our experiences and see if you're able to like sleep more soundly tonight as well and wake up like feeling refreshed.
Well, I hope so.
Me too. Again, it was like perfect timing to have this chat. I love it. And now I know that we were talking a little bit about, you know, the interconnectedness between thoughts and feelings, but I was going to just take a little bit of a deeper dive into what that looks like the interconnectedness between thoughts and feelings.
Perfect. Yeah, that's a good idea.
So in terms of what thought triggers are, and I'm also referencing the article that I shared with you, which it's called, and I'll have this link in the description, it's called What Are Your Thought Triggers? Know the thought, know the emotion. And it says that people often place thoughts and feelings into different compartments of the human mind. However, there exists a much closer relationship between thoughts and feelings than many people suppose. Feeling your thoughts doesn't mean that thoughts are felt in the same way that you feel a pinprick on your arm. Rather, it means recognizing the interconnectedness and how behind every emotion lies a thought that triggers it. So there's like a little exercise of following thoughts with the emotional responses that they are likely to trigger. And so one of them is like, I just have this feeling something terrible is going to happen. I'm just never good enough. What if something bad happens and no one is there to help? So it really does share that when we have a thought, it evokes this feeling that we have, which does seem to have this interconnectedness. And
yeah.
I want to ask if you agree with that and if you kind of feel that this is resonating even with like your personal life and how it might be affecting you as well.
I completely agree with that. And I you know, thoughts do create emotions. And in that article, you know, they were saying we're not going to just feel happy or sad or frustrated without the thought first, even if something happens, right? Even if we get in a car accident, we're going to have that thought of, holy crap, I hope I'm not going to, you know, have a neck injury the rest of my life, or the other person will, or, oh my gosh, it's going to cost so much money. We're having all those thoughts, right?
Mm.
And so even if it's something bad that happens, it's the thoughts that create those emotions. And I think that sometimes, you know, I think it says in the article too, you know, thoughts just kind of float in and out of our minds all the time. And we have sometimes thoughts that aren't even, they don't even make sense, right?
Right.
And we have dark thoughts that are just so random. And some people just kind of let them go, don't even notice them. But people with anxiety happen to grab onto them more.
Right.
And go, why am I having that thought? And then they, you know, anxiety and frustration and fear all entangle with that. And we were talking before we, you know, we officially got on about the podcast, is, and I think we both agree with this too, that it's not just thoughts, but, you know, sometimes we're hungry and we're feeling like, I know me, I have to eat every couple hours.
Me too.
And if I don't eat, like I've had my blood sugar tested, like, oh, I must be hypoglycemic. I've got to be, because I'll end up crying. And they always say, no, your blood sugar's fine. I'm like, well, okay, I'm going to keep eating every couple hours, because if I don't get my food, I'm going to cry. So that's not really a thought. So I agree with that article that thoughts do create our emotions. But I also say, add on that also our hormones, our physical bodies. I mean, if you're waking up and your back really hurts you, you know, I'm sorry. I guess one person could say, well, just be positive and say, I'm so glad I can still walk. Okay, I get that. But if you're in so much pain that you feel like crying, you're going to be bummed out. I'm sorry, you are.
Right.
You're only human.
Right.
So I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that is also, you know, part of the stigma of, you know, things within the mental health space, that when we see someone who has broken a leg or has back pain or something, we don't tell that person, well, just stop thinking that your back is hurting and then it'll go away. Like, there are things that are needed to be put into place to heal that pain and then to, you know, help make sure that that pain doesn't come back. Or you know, if you broke your leg climbing a rock, you sort of learn, like, okay, I'm not going to do that next time. But it's not as easy as just telling someone, like, oh, get over it, the pain will go away. You know, it's having to bring, like, a very to bring attention to that. And I'm learning as well through reading and having these soul chats with, you know, with people who, like yourself, have a background in psychology and have, you know, are able to sort of bring in the science behind all of this too, that it's less about, okay, let's just start thinking super positively. And it's more so about, again, having a way to have better, like, coping mechanisms, and then to be able to interrupt these thought patterns and create new ones. Because I'm learning more about, like, the neural pathways in our brains and being able to sort of, like, unplug and and plug into a new way. But if you're not taught how to do that, you can't just on your own, like, you know, oh, let me just think positively and everything's going to go away. So it's sort of like all of these different, you know, triggers that are caught, you know, causing, like, our thoughts to make us feel certain ways. It's sort of like, I think from what I'm learning is that if we are able to understand how to change our, like, to change these neural pathways and to better manage our thoughts, that then it will result in healing and in recovery. And on top of all of that, as you said, I also do believe, again, from what I'm hearing and learning, that it also has a lot to do with, you know, like the body, like the chemical balances of nutrition, of sleeping, of you know, all of these things, because it really, there is an interconnectedness between all of these things. And
right.
I'm seeing that even in myself, because even just taking sleep as an example, if I don't sleep for at least 7 hours a night, I don't function properly. And I learned when I was, you know, traveling with my boyfriend that if I don't have a decent amount of sleep where I feel like truly rested, I get very like irritable and very, very angry. And like the whole, like everything about the way that I think and how I act is different than if I had at least 7 hours of sleep. And there's like, you know, when you're hungry and angry, it's like called hangry. But
yeah.
I've started like using the phrase tangry, which is tired angry. So
oh,
I get I get tangry if I don't sleep. And so that really changes everything about my, you know, like what's going on in my body. And so there really needs to be this like synergy between the types of foods that we eat, how we take care of our bodies, and the thoughts that we think. I really think that there's just like this connectedness between it all.
It, you know what, it's so true. And we sometimes I think we forget, we're also into our minds, that we're forget it, where our minds are a house in this physical body, and
right.
The physical body responds to what we eat, what we drink. I mean, come on, let's recognize that when people have a cocktail, they're going to be thinking and acting a little differently.
Mm.
So why not when we eat too much sugar? And trust me, everyone out there, I love sugar. I'm not saying I don't eat sugar. But, you know, like if we eat too much sugar without having a good meal first, or, you know, it's all a balance. So, yeah, I know I get face. If I eat like in the afternoon, it's like, oh, I'm gonna have some chocolate. it's like, I'll have some almonds and chocolate, and then I feel more balanced.
Mm.
So yeah, it is so connected. And then hormones, hello,
right?
That is really, and we're not even. That's not even as we're more. I think it's easier to be more aware of what we're eating, right? The hormones are this hidden thing, and we don't even know sometimes that they're hitting us,
right?
So, and for men too, it's not just, and for women of all ages, that
right,
our hormones are doing up and down and sideways, and you know, it's
so true.
Hard. Yeah.
It's so true.
Yeah, and even, you know, getting sick, if we're like fighting a cold, we're feeling more vulnerable.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think it's all, and I want to add this too. This is anecdotal. I don't know if there's been studies done on this. This is just me talking about other people I know that I know have anxiety. What I, you know, kind of read anecdotally is that people that are dealing with anxiety and OCD and other things that are affecting them emotionally, I think are, and again, my opinion, are sometimes their bodies are more sensitive to not having enough sleep, not eating well enough, to their hormones. Because I know some really sturdy people, and my hat is off to them, because they, you know, they could get by on 4 hours of sleep and they don't eat right, and they're like plugging along. And, you know, maybe they have some emotional secret. I don't know about that. What I can see is that they've been born lucky, like they're whatever. And again, all my opinion, they have that. So I guess I'm putting it out there for people who may be listening to this, that if you're feeling like you may be dealing with a mental health condition and you feel like your body is maybe more sensitive than the people around you, to honor that it's not a weakness. It's something to take heed of and take care of and keep the nuts in the purse wherever you go, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree. And with all of these things that we're talking about, what are some of the ways that we can better manage these triggers?
Oh, you mean like the physiological triggers?
And even just the mental triggers that we're having as we're talking about, you know, having these what if thoughts that are, again, you know, making us feel one way or another. Are there ways in which we can better manage these triggers to, you know, to help do something about it as we were kind of sharing at the beginning in terms of like, we've got these triggers and what can we do to manage them?
To manage them, yeah. Well, I would say the first thing that comes to mind, and this is for everything really, is that acronym FEAR, false evidence appearing real. Like,
oh, yes.
So write that down, because they say, too, when you write down with pen on paper or pencil on paper, your mind is going to connect and remember that. So that would be, that's something I'm going to do for myself today.
Mm.
And then to go over again what we talked about is replacing, not trying to push away those thoughts, those emotions that were triggered by thoughts or actions or words by yourself or other people, but to replace with the, what, you know, the three things, what you can do. What can I do?
Mm.
And if that means talking to a trusted friend, if that means Googling the best way to take, like maybe even it's legal advice you have to seek to just quell a fear. I don't know, but just to take action and to, again, I'm kind of just rehashing because I think it's good for all of us to rehash what we talked about, is to really take a good look at what has worked, what has not worked when you're feeling that your emotional buttons have been pushed by either other people or yourself. And if getting outside and taking a walk works, by all means do it. If going to the art museum and seeing beautiful pieces of art works and takes you out, do it. You know, maybe carve out time. If there's a certain song that just like, you know, really resonates for you, do it. And I think too that there's that line, I'll just kind of add on to this. There's that line when I'm feeling really down or depressed, I want to do something that's going to be cathartic for me, right? So I want to read something really sad and cry. I want to watch something really sad and cry. I want to listen to really sad music that maybe is going to remind me of something that makes me really sad and cry, cry, cry. Well, sometimes there's that line. Sometimes it's cathartic, but sometimes it just spirals me more down. So for people to be aware of what's truly cathartic for them and what's going to release their emotions and then let them kind of move forward with whatever they got triggered by, or what's going to maybe get them more stuck. So again, that's the self-awareness.
Wow. That was so powerful and so beautifully said.
Oh, thank you.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And I'm so glad that this is being recorded, because I'm going to go back and re-listen and write everything down that you just said, because that was like the perfect summary and the perfect like go-to checklist of how we can better manage all of these things and you know, change the way that we're feeling. And I couldn't agree more with you that there are definitely times where, especially, you know, for the ladies, like when we're on that time of the month and we really just want like a good cry, and it's like it feels good to to have chocolate and get that rush and watch like a sappy romantic comedy. Like we've all been there and we're going
right.
to continue to be there. And I really do agree with you that, you know, I think there's sort of like this time and a place, because I was having a conversation with someone who I'm actually offering coaching services to, but she, you know, was having discussions with me about something very similar. And I shared with her that what's been working with me is feeling certain emotions with like so much intensity. So for example, if I am having those what if thoughts and there's something that is giving me the feeling of pain versus pleasure, and I'm just ruminating on asking myself the same question over and over and over again, what I've been finding to be helpful is giving myself like an allotted time slot. Like, okay, you're allowed to be really sad and like think about this what if question and sort of, you know, ruminate on it for like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Have this feeling with as much intensity as, you know, as much intensity as possible. And then after the 30 minutes, let that feeling, you know, release that feeling and think something new or refocus
right.
your attention on something else.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I have
yeah.
to say that this has been like a personal practice that I've been implementing because, you know, I want to make sure that I'm practicing what I'm preaching in all aspects.
Yeah.
And when I give myself like time frames to do things, and I notice this even in my professional life, you know, when I have to get things done, like I tell myself, okay, you're going to work on this for 30 minutes. You're going to work on this for 1 hour. You're going to work on this. And sometimes like you get interruptions, there's bathroom breaks. You have to stop and have lunch.
Right.
You know, you're,
right.
we're human. However, there is something that has been shifting in my mindset about giving myself like time blocks to even have these like room for thoughts. And
yeah.
I just wanted to kind of add that because I thought it correlated with what you were just sharing, that, you know, if we are sort of becoming aware that we are stuck in a cycle of this, you know, what if or rumination, and we're thinking about thoughts that are instigating like anxiety and depression, let's feel that feeling, give ourselves, you know, a time frame, and then refocus and ask yourself a new set of questions that will help you to interrupt that pattern and like think something new.
It, you know what? Perfect, what you just said. And then I would say too, make sure it's during the daylight before, you know, so you're not, so you get rid of it during the day and then your mind doesn't need to ruminate it at it at night and interrupt
your
sleep.
That's true. So,
yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, I love what you said. This is so great. Amazing. And now I also wanted to share just quickly as we are coming to a close, as it's been like an hour already, and I can't believe how quickly time goes. There was also an article that you shared with me before we talked on the phone. I didn't have a chance to reference it in the call, but there was an article that you wrote, correct, that was a similar topic.
Oh, yes, and I was kind of actually referencing that as I talked because I don't have the
great.
Best memory in the world.
me too. Trying to...
It was first published in Psych Central. And,
Psych Central, okay.
Yeah, they're a great website, mental health website, and I write for them. And then, and so it's on there, and then I just recently posted it on my own blog post. They let you after a week has gone by to post on your own blog post. And I can't remember the title for what it is for them, but I have it right here. For the title on them is, Are You Pushing Your Own Emotional Buttons? Learn How to Stop. That was published on January 1st with them. And then on my own blog post, it's called How to Stop Pushing Your Own Emotional Buttons. And I just published that yesterday. So you
can find
it in their place. It's the same blog post. And yeah, so it's a little bit of what we talked about. But we, between the two of us, I think we got some more meat in there, which I think is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree completely.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, Sam, I'm going to include the links to Tracy's articles, and I'll have her website on the or in the description as well. Again, it's www.tracyshant.com. The article that we referenced in addition to Tracy's is also going to be in the description. It is on Psychology Today, which is another really great resource that has a lot of mental health related topics. This was phenomenal, as always, Tracy, and it's truly such a pleasure to soul chat with you again, and I'm really grateful for your time today. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Lizzie, so much. I really appreciate you having me on, and I'm honored.
Of course. Thank you again. And I'm going to, you also are on Twitter, and remind me again the other social media platforms that you're on.
Mainly on Twitter, a little bit on Facebook and on Pinterest, but my main go-to is Twitter. Being a writer, I just, because it's words.
Yes. I love it. And Twitter is my go-to as well. And again, The Grace of Crows is her book. So please go and send Tracy some love and stay tuned. A little sneak peek. We might have Tracy as another on another episode as a guest. Author to do like a book club style on her book. So stay tuned for that. Again, Tracy, thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and tune in next week for a new topic. To help spread the good vibes, please share this episode with friends and family. Or if you share on social, be sure to tag me at Coach Lizzie.